Good morning, once and all, once and for all. This is the last time. I'm gonna finish this thing up and just say everything that I've got to say. I'm Johnny Roller, what's left of him. I'm not sleeping much, and the baby's not even here yet, so I'm probably doomed in about a week. But with what I have left, I would like to welcome to the show the one, the only, Jessica Burbank. Jessica, how's it going?
I'm glad we are getting a show in before John becomes Dad John and doesn't have time for the news anymore.
Exactly. I'll probably move on. It's just, it's not going to be important to me anymore. But anyway, hopefully you'll be on the show in my, you know, in my absence. We've got, you know, multiple different co-hosts coming in. I would love to have you join them to discuss the news. But before we talk about the news, let's talk about what you've been up to. There's a podcast.
There could be
a panel.
Yeah, John. We want to do a live pod thing at South by Southwest, which is apparently a very big deal. So if you like when we talk about progressive economics and you think that's an important part of the conversation, you should go to Twitter and there's a link there where you can vote for us to do exactly that.
Nice. That would be all. Well, and for people who might not be familiar with the podcast, tell me a little bit about
it. Yeah, it's called Funny Money. It's a podcast about the economy, how it works and how it can work better. That's our whole thing. And it's funny sometimes as well.
Always money, sometimes funny.
Yes.
I like it. Put it on a t-shirt. Anyway, everyone definitely go and vote. South by Southwest is a lot of fun. I lived in Austin for a number of years. I once covered South by Southwest and got the name wrong of an incredibly famous guitarist like a month before he died. And I will never forget that because he corrected me and I felt terrible. In my defense, I didn't know who he was because I don't know who anyone in music is, but I felt bad about it. Anyway, yeah, you should definitely.
Money, I get it, John.
Yeah. I know your name though. But anyway, everyone go vote on that. And with that said, we have a lot that we're going to be talking about through the course of the show. Coming up in the first hour, we are going to be breaking down the results of the Ohio ballot vote. Could be good news, could be bad news. I know that you all abstained from checking until our show went live. Thank you for that. Donald Trump rolls out an absolutely insane new attack against the DA in Fulton County, who might be releasing indictments anytime soon. Actually, that could happen during our show. We'll be wading through a bit more of his recent attacks against other Republicans, against the indictments against him, basically a storm of BS. So that'll be fun. But then we're also gonna be talking about Joe Biden making the claim that he is not getting effectively enough credit for his climate agenda, that he's taking it just as serious as anyone could hope. And we're gonna be responding to that as well as a lot of other news. Kyrsten Sinema, does she actually matter anymore? We're gonna weigh the evidence. And that's just in the first hour. More to come in the aftermath, but in advance of all that, please hit the like button and share the stream so people know we're live and they can come join in the conversation. And if you send us a particularly good comment, maybe you'll earn yourself a $100 Blue Apron gift card. So get those comments in. With all that said, Jessica, you ready to start this thing?
Ready to do the news, John.
Okay, let's do it. Start with this.
Well, we have some breaking news. The Associated Press has now called it. They have now called the race. We can call that issue one in Ohio that would have raised the threshold for constitutional amendments to 60% has gone down to a defeat, according to the Associated Press.
So we've been waiting now for some time to find out what's gonna happen with one of the most watched ballot measures of the year, and down it goes. Effectively, this is the pattern that we've seen whenever you give the people the choice of whether they wanna have bodily autonomy. Now this of course did not directly bear on that, but it was obvious that that was the intent. And thankfully, you know, many people in Ohio got that, that effectively in advance of an effort later in the year to enshrine the right to bodily autonomy in the state constitution, what they were trying to do now was to make it more difficult for that to actually pass. Telegraphing, by the way, that they don't think they have a chance of convincing people of their position to strip away their rights legally. Anyway, we're gonna give you our responses, but first I do wanna throw to one of our sort of unofficial Ohio correspondents, the one and only Nina Turner.
The people of the great state of Ohio have spoken, resoundingly rejecting the GOP overreach, which is indeed a beautiful thing. And we know that folks in Ohio, voters in Ohio from all the political ideologies weighed in on this. And they said to the GOP, you have gone too far. And I know that the GOP themselves made this strictly about abortion. I understand abortion rights activists are celebrating that this is so much bigger than just abortion access. There will be issues on the ballot to raise the minimum wage. Who knows coming down the pike what other issues will be on the ballot. And the people of this state have a right to weigh in as a supermajority and as a simple majority and not a supermajority. And I am so glad that the GOP's power grab was rejected in this state.
And I share with her being glad about that. We're going to throw up the actual results. It was a resounding success for people who want that effort later in the year to work. I would have loved for it to be even stronger. But Jessica, what do you think about the results?
Crazy situation. Very good that this was not passed, because it's insane that Republicans in the state of Ohio said we're going to do this thing where we make it so that the threshold to pass an amendment is higher. They did this in August, where previously they made it illegal to hold elections because of low voter turnout. So it's good that people actually showed up and voted for this and protected their democratic rights there. Also crazy they decided to hold this particular election when the abortion amendment was polling at about 59%. So very deliberate, that 60% threshold they were going for.
Yeah, 100%. And by the way, like, this is, you know, this is a great win. It's a relatively red state. And we've seen this before. We saw this in Kansas with an actual direct ballot measure directly about abortion access. Like we've been saying it for years. They could, the reason they had to do the strategy that they did to take out Roe v. Wade is because they tried for decades and decades and decades, longer than Jessica's been alive, a little bit longer than I've been alive, to try to persuade people their position, and they have failed. They have failed for decades and decades and decades, and they have no hope that they will ever succeed. So they've decided to stop trying. And I know some people might be thinking, well, so them raising the threshold for the ballot measures, like, obviously in the short term, that's about stopping, you know, the, you know, abortion access and all that. And as Nina points out, it potentially could ward off like a raise to the minimum wage or something. But like, it's not a strictly ideological thing. Like, wouldn't they be stopping themselves from doing things in the future? Like an effort to ban trans athletes, or, you know, stop IVF or something, or whatever. And that is technically true. But I want to remind people what I try to all the time. Republicans don't need, and by that I don't mean regular Republicans, I mean their elite class in politics and in media, don't need to do anything. They might want to do things sometimes. They might want to fill a news cycle with whatever the distraction is, but they don't need to do anything, because the only things they might need to do are things that would enshrine them as the economic winners in our system. And that's been baked in for longer than 50 years. They just want to waste time and stop anything from happening. Throwing up all these roadblocks, having gridlock, making it impossible for anything to get done, would only be equally bad for both sides if each side was equally burdened by obstacles, problems that need to be solved. But that's not the case. They'll complain about things every once in a while, but economically, they got multiple rounds of tax cuts with Reagan and Bush and Trump as well. They're already raking in all that money. What needs to be done is fixing the system, and that's all they're trying to do is stop that from happening. So they would love to raise the threshold for ballot measures across the country. They would love to raise, they effectively have done that federally with the fact that everything is just automatically filibustered. So anyway, just bear that in mind. Like, it might seem like this is potentially shooting themselves in the foot, but they are perfectly happy to do that. Other thoughts, Jessica? Sorry for that.
No, I think that's absolutely right. I think the Republican mission right now is just as little regulation as possible, as little government as possible.
Yeah, as little of a government that's actually capable of accomplishing anything. Now, I'm curious, so like this, I wanted to get an idea, and we still need to find out whether the ballot measure actually passes later this year. It seems like it has a pretty good chance of doing that, but that would be yet more evidence of the salience of this topic and where people even in red states land on it. So I know that there are some Democrats that are really hoping that once again, you know, as in the midterms, this is going to be the thing that's really going to help a lot of Democrats to win races. Like, they're going to have a tough battle to maintain the Senate. Are you still thinking that this is going to be one of the driving issues next year? Or do you think it might be eclipsed by other news, foreign policy, the Trump legal battles, anything like that?
I think it will continue to be an issue. I think we'll see not just like Democrats really make this the central point in their message, because they've really failed overwhelmingly on getting anything done economically, right? We had the IRA, that was good, but there are a lot of things that Joe Biden and the Democrats promised that they didn't make good on. I think centering maybe instead the way Joe Biden has started to a little bit, that Republicans are taking credit for all of these projects and programs in their state that have been funded by federal funds allocated to their states thanks to the passing of the IRA. A lot of them voted against that. But I do think we'll see the abortion issue come up time and again. I think they're going to try and not make it as central for their state Senate races, their state House races, and make it more central when they're running, you know, on the national level for those seats. But unfortunately, it looks like they're taking this approach of these, you know, ballot initiatives that are really well funded from out of state money. I think if a lot of people knew how much out of state money was coming into their states in support of a lot of these pro-life amendments, when their state reps are telling their constituents that the reason they want to pass this ballot initiative in Ohio to increase the threshold for future constitutional amendments, that they're doing that with a ton of out of state funding. That's what funded this Ohio election. And so really, it's about democracy at this point for me, not even about the issue of abortion, because it's pretty clear that for most people, they support access to abortion. And it's really undemocratic the way they're going about this, not only it being funded with out of state money, but the way they're trying to get things like this passed without the majority of votes in the state.
Yeah, 100%. And I'll remind everyone, so first I want to give credit to the voter turnout, but then I'll remind people the stakes here. The turnout, the early voting turnout broke records. We had previewed that in the lead up to it, but as of Wednesday, more than 533,000 people had voted by mail or in person since the early voting began, which is incredibly high, like basically lapping some of these previous efforts. So that's good. And a reminder of the actual stakes here, the Ohio legislature passed some of the nation's strictest curbs on abortion last year. They banned it as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy, which is the equation, that's what was spat out of the equation the right ran for. How can we effectively ban it entirely while pretending that we're not banning it entirely? A 6 week ban from their point of view is banning it entirely, basically, unless everything comes up you as a person who would like to have control of your body. So that's why they're doing it. State courts have yet to rule on the constitutionality of those curbs, bearing in mind, of course, that these sorts of things could be appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court, where they've proven themselves to be pretty radical on the topic, obviously. And then, of course, we later on in November have the ballot measure that could potentially override that rule with a constitutional protection for bodily autonomy. So that we will have to see. The polling looks good. But not everyone is as happy necessarily as us or as Nina Turner when it comes to this. Why don't we jump to Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose on Fox and Friends reacting to the result.
What's Ohio telling you?
Well, I tell you what, 1.3 million Ohioans stood with us in another free and fair election. We released the results on election night. That's this thing we do in Ohio. Other states should check out. Proud to say that as Ohio's chief elections officer. But you're right, the other side prevailed. This is just one battle in a much larger war, though, because the all-out assault on Ohio is coming from the radical left. I mean, look at the tech billionaires from California and New York that funded the No campaign, and they've got other bad plans. This radical abortion amendment this November that takes away parental rights. They want to bring a minimum wage increase, a massive increase in minimum wage to Ohio that would put Ohioans out of work. And even the mayor of Cleveland said last week, he said the quiet part out loud, they want to do common sense gun reform, which means they want to disarm law-abiding citizens. So yeah, we lost one battle, but the war continues and I've just begun to fight.
Okay, so I love the like, hey, we were able to count it night of. If you can't, that's suspicious, even if you've passed laws in your state to make it so that it can't be counted until the election is done. So playing into the big lie there needlessly. So look, they're gonna keep trying to push for, you know, second class citizen for people who can get pregnant. We know that they're not gonna, they've seen 50 years of them being, you know, in the minority on this topic. They're certainly not gonna stop now. But I did find it funny, Jessica, that he turned in basically the same direction as Nina Turner. Like, he's appealing to people to be like, hey, they're gonna try to raise your wages later. You should be terrified of that. That would be awful. Don't let them do it. It's such an interesting way to run a party. to tell people you are going to be making too much money and you have too many rights. We really need to correct this situation. But it's a strategy that they're sticking with. What do you make of it?
Yeah, it's absurd, especially what he says there about the radical left coming into Ohio and funding, you know, the no campaign. That's absurd because Richard Ulahein, the Republican mega donor, was the sole donor of the PAC that ran ads in favor of the campaign to increase the threshold. The campaign also to have this amendment that would codify abortion rights in the state of Ohio to prevent it from passing, just running the most ridiculous extremist ads. He's the PAC sole donor. He's not an Ohioan. He's not from Ohio. So you're talking about the out of state radical left coming into Ohio when precisely it's the right from out of state that is pushing this thing that people in Ohio clearly overwhelmingly are not supporting. That's what the polling shows, that they actually want to codify a right to abortion. They don't support what the members of Congress are doing in their state, and they clearly don't support increasing the threshold as they voted decisively. And so it's absurd that they're making it seem like it's this out of state threat to things that people in the state want, when all of the information we have about the situation shows the exact opposite is true. And so it's absurd he can confidently go on television and say that, and then say something larger to cast doubt on the integrity of elections. This is a Secretary of State. It's just really sad how things are going in our country, and especially Ohio, with someone going on the news saying those things.
Yeah, being willing to be so condescendingly dishonest to everyone watching it, but particularly people who agree with him. And I don't have telepathy. I don't know exactly what this guy is like, but he's the sort of person that, you know, we got lucky in the last election that there were a few people in key positions that weren't willing to play ball on some of these schemes. And then there are toadies like him who are clearly there, willing to do whatever it takes to hand the country over to the craziest radicals we've got. Anyway, a little bit of good news to start off the show. Thankfully, Ohio did the right thing. Thank you, Ohio and Ohioans. With that, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, Donald Trump lashing out ahead of some pending indictments that are likely coming from Georgia. We'll have that for you and more after this. Okay, everyone, if you are just joining us now, I'm here, Jessica Burbank is here. You should have already hit the like button. If you haven't, you are a disappointment to me, but there is still time to write it. Go do it now. Also, go vote for Jessica's panel for South by Southwest, live episode of Funny Money. You can go on the internet and find that. And with that, let's jump back into the news.
They waited, and I probably have another one. They say there's a young woman, a young racist in Atlanta, say racist. And they say, I guess, they say that she was after a certain gang and she ended up having an affair with the head of the gang or a gang member. And this is a person that wants to indict me. She's got a lot of problems, but she wants to indict me to try and run for some other office. What's going on in this country is, and by the way, wants to indict me for a perfect phone call. This was even better than my perfect call with Ukraine.
Okay, I don't care so much about the stupid BS about the perfect call or him like going off on his nobody's ever seen it and then losing track of his own thought process. Now let's focus there on the fact that the former president of the United States is claiming 100% baselessly that the district attorney, Fani Willis, which is looking into him in Fulton County, and we expect indictments to come within the next week, had some sort of illicit affair with a gang member that she was investigating. If that seems wild, if that seems like, wait, wouldn't we have heard something about that? Yeah, no, your instincts are right. It's based on nothing. In fact, this isn't even the first time he's done it. It's just the first time that we've actually heard about it. Last week, he posted a video on Truth Social featuring a Rolling Stone headline about Miss Willis defending rapper YSL Mondo back in 2019. And he falsely claimed that she got caught hiding a relationship with a gang member she was prosecuting. There is no suggestion or evidence that she had any romantic relationships with the rapper, who described, quote, mother to son type of talks with her, according to Rolling Stone. She is married, she has two children. She is also expected to soon indict him for trying to overturn the results of the election. So if you were trying to put together a full list of the evidence with which he has crafted this argument that she had an affair with a rapper, it's that she's about to indict him. But he's not gonna allow him to, like, he is the former president of the United States. And I know that I'm an absolute moron to have any standards whatsoever. We should be totally comfortable with what he just did. It should be so normalized that nobody should have a problem with it. But it does seem, it seems insane even for America 2023. Jessica, what do you make of it?
It really does. It's especially insane when you consider Fannie Willis's family. Her, the people who came before her were involved with the Black Panther Party. And she lived in the United States long enough to become a district attorney in Fulton County. That's a pretty big deal. For Donald Trump to say that she's racist and then to call YSL a gang member simply because he's a rapper and he's Black, but he's calling Fannie Willis racist, really, Donald Trump? To say something so explicitly racist and then accuse her of being racist is absolutely insane. It doesn't make any sense. Let's also just unpack the mother-son relationship. Would you want a defense attorney or a DA to kind of tell the young people who get in trouble, hey, like maybe reconsider this kind of life, maybe reconsider the behavior that got you caught up in the law? That sounds like a legal system I would like to have, where the defense attorneys and prosecutors care enough to have those conversations with people that are either their clients or someone that they have to prosecute on behalf of the state. That sounds like a pretty good situation for our justice system, better than business as usual. And so everything he says there is absurd. The way he goes into perfect phone call and trying to defend himself is absolutely ridiculous, because there's so much documented information to the contrary. And what he does there is he knows that his viewers and fans are not gonna look for that evidence or listen to it. They're like, oh, he says it's a perfect phone call, I guess he's not a criminal.
Yep. Yeah, like again, it's always a perfect phone call. It's always a hoax. I've given up on trying to get people to see past his absolutely buffoonish evasions from culpability for the things that he's done. And yeah, I agree with you about, you know, it's so weird that he would have a problem with this sort of strategy for a DA. Of course, he just wants, you know, it's a criminal, just lock him up. Don't consider them. And especially, oh my God, if it's a Black criminal, then forget about it. By the way, this morning I saw Greg Gutfeld had said that 98% of accusations of racism are false. And I believe that we found the 2% that he would accept. It is Donald Trump calling every Black woman he's ever interacted with a racist. Why are they a racist? It's they're Black women. That's it. That's all it is. That's all it takes. He's not even making the case for why she's a racist. Did you notice that? He's not saying she said this mean thing about me, so that means that she's a racist against white people. Well, that would be bigotry, of course, and they can accept that that makes you racist against white people. It's totally irrelevant when people do it against people of color, but he's not even doing that. She just is Black, that's it, end of story. And that's you know, unconvincing to people who don't pre-agree with him on that, but he knows his base and he knows what they think about people like Fannie Willis and how ready they are to believe that sort of thing. And there's the racism, but then there's also the anyone he doesn't like, particularly women of color, you don't need to pay attention to anything they say, because if you consider the possibility that they're sluts, that's what he does with all of them. That's how they attacked Harris, that's how they're attacking her. It's just always there's something suspicious in their background sexually, so you shouldn't have to pay attention to them. I will ask a hypothetical. Let's say she did. Let's say she had that affair. Does that mean he didn't try to overthrow the results of the 2020 election? What possible bearing does that have on literally anything? And if you're automatically guilty of, if you're automatically guilty of everything because you had an affair, well, Donald Trump, I would point you to your past and the very well-documented affairs that you've engaged in. Of course, you're a dude, so it's not a problem. Let's remember that. Sorry, what were you gonna say?
I think I have some insight into what's going on here. He calls it a romantic relationship, right, John? He calls this thing that was just a parent-child conversation a romantic relationship. When you consider how he talks about Ivanka, maybe a parent-child relationship is romantic in his eyes.
Yeah, for us, it would seem to be ruling that out. For him, it's just the added special something to the romance. Absolutely gross, you're the worst. Anyway, we're gonna add this lie about her to the list, which as of when he'd ended his presidency, the Washington Post had cataloged 30,000 false or misleading statements, which is truly amazing. I mean, honestly, I don't know how much higher that is than any president, but it just objectively seems like a lot. And as I said when I intro'd this, bear in mind, they are expected to seek election charges in Fulton County sometime in the next week, so prepare for that. That said, in terms of his legal battle this week, it's been mostly about the protective order back and forth. So we might be getting that soon. But if we do, does it actually mean anything? He wants to assure you that it does not. Take a look at this.
Crooked Joe now wants the thug prosecutor, this deranged guy, to file a court order taking away my First Amendment rights so that I can't speak. So listen to this. We don't want you to speak about the case. The case is a ridiculous case. It's a First Amendment case. But we don't want Trump to speak. So they want me, they take away your rights on First Amendment. Now they sue because they're, so now I have one of these lunatic reporters back there saying, sir, would like to talk to you about your case. I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to talk about it. Somehow that's not good for votes. Do you agree? When we say, I can't talk, I'd love to, I will talk about it. I will. They're not taking away my First Amendment right.
Okay, so even if they do the protective order, which by the way, I'll remind you, as we broke down with AB Burns Tucker yesterday, is a routine measure. I mean, it's not routine in cases involving ex-presidents, because generally ex-presidents don't spend years committing a whole bunch of totally needless crimes, but it happens in cases. In any event, he's saying, I will not abide by it. If they rule that I cannot say these things, I can't intimidate witnesses, I can't reveal, you know, privileged information, I can't leak evidence, I'm gonna do it anyway, which is one of two things. It's either false bravado, which would not be out of character for Donald Trump, or it's an actual promise that he intends to keep. And Jessica, I just wanna say, I really hope it's the latter. I hope that they put this protective order on him. And by the way, there's gonna be a hearing Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern. So we'll actually be able to talk about the results of it, exactly whether it exists at all, the protective order. And if so, what information, what limitations, all of that. He's saying, and he won't have to be there, by the way, he's saying, I'm still gonna do it anyway. And I really hope that he does, but what do you think?
Yeah, I really hope that he does too. I think he's quickly gonna realize that if he does, he's not gonna be able to talk at all anymore. There are limitations to free speech. It's hilarious how the Republican Party specifically has made their whole thing law and order. New York City is the most scary and dangerous place, and people are doing so much crime, but their main guy has no respect for law and order whatsoever. And whenever the law is applied to the people, that often skirt it, the elites and the political class in this country, suddenly they're like, well, this is just corruption. This is corruption. They're mad that I'm doing well in the polls, which by the way, he is not doing exceedingly much better than Joe Biden is. He's doing well in the Republican primary, but he always says, you know, the precise polling numbers for the Republican primary, how many points ahead he is. But when it comes to the general election, which he's aware of those poll numbers, he just says, and by the way, also way ahead of Joe Biden. How many points is that, Donald? He's not way ahead of Joe Biden. This is very obviously not political prosecution. And it's hilarious that they make the issue of law and order so central, but they refuse to follow it. That makes this campaign absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, no, you're totally right. Everything is free speech until it's someone else's speech that they don't like, and then they want to literally burn them alive. Like again, they're against cancel culture until like, oh my God, you talked to Dylan Mulvaney, now you should be destroyed. Like yeah, they don't mean what they think. He believes any law, anything, any regulation that would stop you from speaking is obviously invalid, and yet he's never hesitated to do hush money payments, NDAs. What about their freedom of speech, Don? Why don't you care about all these women talking about the experience they had with you? But anyway, yeah, we'll see. I hope that it's put in place. I hope that he violates it. I hope that they throw him in jail. We'll see. Interestingly, something kind of like that apparently already exists. The details of the document that he signed as a condition for him to be released when he was first arraigned, that's now been revealed. And on it, it warned him not to intimidate or attempt to intimidate any witness, juror, informant, or officer of the court. It also warns against tampering or retaliation involving other persons in the court. Violating those, or that's a totally separate thing that could potentially put him in prison for 10 years or $250,000 fine, or at the very least it would for a regular person. He continues to get special treatment. As many people have pointed out, he is now facing apparently, I think 71 or 73 indictments, and he is walking free. There's been no mugshot, there's nothing. It's just again, like he has this mountain of indictments, any one or two of which would cause a person to be held in pretrial detainment. But for him, still protected, even with the Obama appointed judge and all that. They keep talking about a two-tier justice system. There very much is one, and he's benefiting from it.
Yeah, it's such a good point you make about him paying hush money to people, taking away their free speech, essentially buying it. But then also imagine if literally anyone else was like, if you try and throw the book at me, you try and throw the law at me in this way, I promise you I'm going to violate it. If anyone else did that, they would be calling them thugs, talk about how no one has respect for the law, how disgraceful that is. But it's so hypocritical because it's Donald Trump. They're like, this is fine. He's probably right. That's the danger of a demagogue. But I think unfortunately for Donald Trump, he's burned so many bridges with other people that it's him alone with his following. And I don't think it's gonna take him very far this time around.
Yeah, no, 100%. There's a lot of hypocrisies in politics that I wish we could like snap our fingers and correct. Yeah. But the ones around the right's complete fake, fraudulent position on free speech, I would love to see. Like Jesse Waters putting the NDAs on his employees for just to hide what he's actually done. Elon Musk talking about how he's going to like pay the legal bills of people who have their like videos taken down on social media platforms. He literally fired engineers for posting Slack messages he didn't like. Like this is not the free speech position they want you to believe it is. Anyway, with that said, we do need to move ahead. I think we're gonna call sort of audibles on the C block. I think that we should start with the second video. We've talked quite a bit about the indictment. So whenever we're ready, why don't we jump into that second video?
I could have been relaxing at Mar-a-Lago or in the south of France, which I would prefer being in this country, frankly.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing that if a Democrat said, you'd imagine Republicans would have a problem with. The idea that he would prefer to be living outside of the US. I personally think it's perfectly fine. Lots of people have great experiences living abroad. I find the image of him living in France absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I find the idea of him living literally at all ridiculous. I don't know how it works. But the idea that he could just leave and forget all of this stuff and not campaign and not try to be president again and just go live somewhere. That is the advice that we have been giving to him for literally years. I, Jessica, will never understand why any billionaire does what they do. If I had $1 billion, you would literally never see me again. I don't understand why they don't just go off and go drink like fancy frou-frou drinks and read a book and swim in the ocean. But anyway, he persists. And so we're gonna talk about it. He, of course, still has to get through the Republican primary. And that means getting through Ron DeSantis, a guy who thought that his position, you know, on woke issues or, you know, his desire to utterly annihilate the LGBTQ community would make this an easy path for him. It hasn't been, partially because Donald Trump is kind of stealing his shtick, as you'll see in this clip.
I'll also restore the Trump ban on transgender in the military. We're gonna end that. We had it banned. We had it banned. You know, I went to generals. I said, General, off the record, what do you think of transgender, sir? Is anybody listening, sir? What do you think? I don't like it, sir.
So that was gross. Yeah, that was his position on transgender in the military. And that's a real conversation that he had with generals. And they really said that. The whole thing is just so gross. And I know, look, this is mostly just to serve to remind people of what it's like to have him as a prominent politician, Jessica. But remember, he tried to persecute trans people in a variety of different venues, including in the military. Thankfully, a lot of that has been reversed since he was president. But were he to become president again, I think there's every reason to believe he would put those sorts of restrictions back in place. So a little preview of what could come. What do you think about this?
Yeah, all of it's a bit absurd. To talk about Mar-a-Lago in the south of France and say he'd rather be there hanging out. This guy rose to power on a lot of populist rhetoric. A lot of like everyday people have kind of been screwed over in our country. Our leaders aren't representing you anymore. They're not governing on your behalf. They're destroying the economy, making things hard for you, etc. And he's just bragging about going to his very wealthy vacation homes and destinations. Like, this is our guy. The same base of Trump voters, if you ask them, hey, why is communism so bad? They'll tell you something along the lines of everyday people have to work really hard and there's a few really rich guys in control of everything. And they will not apply that same description to the very obvious fitting description it is for Donald Trump. I mean, seriously, everything that they are taught to be afraid of with this one word goes on in the country. If you don't like rich people being above the law and in charge and running the economy against your self-interest while you work very hard every day and struggle to meet your most basic needs, guess what? You want to vote for some pretty substantive change in the country, something that Donald Trump is not at all fighting for. And that's very obvious to me. And I don't know what it's going to take for it to be obvious to everyone. Unfortunately, I think that Donald Trump is going to keep flipping the rhetoric and keeping his base for as long as possible. And hopefully he gets indicted before he gets to public office. But the path that he's on right now is a scary one.
Yeah, to your question of what is it going to take to get through to them? Nothing. Nothing is going to. Like, he is, Donald Trump is like tailor-made to be the worst possible messenger for a populist message if you actually gave a damn about it substantively. He is wealthy. He's been wealthy for literally decades. He has used his wealth to buy politicians. He has done absolutely nothing to try to change that system. I mean, look, I've one of the missions of this show for years now has been to point out how like paper thin the facade, I guess the depth of right-wing populism is in this country. But most of the people who are messaging it in this country are absolutely wealthy, obviously doing what they're doing to advance the interests of the wealthiest people in the country. And it never gets through to regular Republicans, partially because I think they are so justifiably desperate for something to change. But then also their brains have been utterly rotted by decades of right-wing media that they can no longer tell lie from truth. And so these rich a-holes on Fox News, these rich a-holes in independent right-wing media, these rich a-holes in the Republican Party lie to them. They tell them, you know, something, something trans swimmer, something, something hot M&M. And then they pass tax cuts for billionaires. And lots of conservatives are like, sign me up for another term. It doesn't make any sense. The desire for true populism on the right is clearly there, but what's delivered to them is the most obvious, slimy, smarmy political BS ever. And it's amazing that it works. Anyway, I want to jump into one more topic to give you a little bit of preview of some of the internal drums in the Republican nomination that we might see play out on stage in just a few weeks. Let's jump into this.
No, Christie's, he's eating right now. He can't be bothered. Sir, please do not call him a fat pig. That's very disrespectful. Don't call him. See, I'm trying to be nice. Don't call him a fat pig. You can't do it. You can't do that. So now, because you're not allowed to do that, and therefore we're not going to do it, okay? We want to be very civil, right?
Can we just like, can we just flush the country down the toilet? Can we just hit reboot on our entire political system? That like apparently somebody actually yelled it at him that Chris Christie is a fat pig. And under the guise of giving literally a damn about decorum or anything like it, or even just not wanting to glass house yourself into oblivion, Donald Trump repeatedly repeats it. He's a fat pig. He said at one point that Chris Christie was somewhere eating. Like, no one should be mocked for their physical appearance or their physical fitness or their BMI in politics. But then there's the added layer of Donald Trump is morbidly obese. Donald Trump should not be mocked for his weight. But you would also think that he would be the main, like, considering his own obvious decades-long struggle with his weight. The idea that he would not have one shred of sympathy for another person, and that the person in the crowd is looking at Donald Trump, a guy who is obviously morbidly obese, and says, you know what I'm going to mock this other guy for? His waistline. And everyone in the crowd is like, yeah, that's hilarious. Chris Christie's fat, so screw him. Now continue talking, Donald Trump. Tell me more about how other people don't take care of their bodies. Again, like this really goes back to what we were saying about the populist message and how obviously fake it is coming from Donald Trump. There is nothing that is so obviously hypocritical that it will get through to these people. They will eat whatever is given to them, metaphorically, I mean. What do you think?
I don't know, John. Sounds like you're calling them a pig by saying they'll eat whatever's given to them. But
in terms of political discourse.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I think it's not presidential at all to say, oh, what? You think my opponent is fat? Let me just repeat that for the crowd because that benefits me. That's the kind of discourse I want to promote. I don't mean like it's not presidential, like it's not professional. I think there's a certain appeal because Donald Trump is the kind of guy that talks like a lot of everyday working people talk in terms of not having a filter. People are like, oh, you know, sometimes I make fun of other people's appearances too, and I use crude language too. He's such a relatable guy. What would you expect from a president? Is if he wants to make, you know, people being obese in America an issue, people being unhealthy and eating in a way that's not good for them an issue. Talk about the lack of regulation we've had on behalf of the FDA because it's been so terribly corrupt. Let's talk about all of the preservatives and chemicals that are in our food in the United States that the same corporations will take out when they sell it in Europe because they have regulations that protect consumers and the everyday people. You know, if you're going to be the president and you want to talk about an issue such as somebody's health and their BMI, make it a real issue that's a real problem for the country. What are you running on? That guy's fat and I'm slightly less fat. That's not a strong campaign.
It doesn't seem like it should be, but I guess you can't argue with the polls. But anyway, yeah, I agree. There's potentially some sort of policy-based issues that you could mention in relation to this that people would care about, or you could talk about healthcare in general. But no, he's in it for the insults. That's it. Okay, we're gonna take our second break. When we come back, lots more to talk about. Don't go anywhere. How did that social break pass so fast? Anyway, Jonna said, time flies when the crumbling society around you just keeps going. Thanks to John, the one that hooked me, the biggest feminist I know in all of TYT, including my cohorts in the chat. Thanks for being here. Thank you. It's been a crazy 30 months, but we appreciate your continued support. Thank you. And we will be reading more Twitch chats. It's not Twitch erasure. And somebody is recommending the name Pop-Tartia for my daughter. It's a sweet name, but no, we're not naming her Pop-Tartia. Anyway, with that said, let's jump into more news, starting with this.
Are you prepared to declare a national emergency with respect to climate change?
We've already done that. We've conserved more land. We've rejoined the Paris Climate Accord. We've passed a $368 billion climate control facility. We're moving. It is the existential threat to humanity.
So you've already declared that national emergency?
Well, in the practice, you have a bug on it.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate it. So you've already declared that national emergency?
Practically speaking, yes. Yeah.
Practically speaking, no. Practically speaking, what are you talking about? You did not. Declaring an emergency is not like a vague thing. You know, it's a thing you sort of do, maybe kind of. No, it's a specific thing that presidents can and very often do, by the way. In the about 50 years that we've had this system for declaring presidential emergencies, every president has declared at least one. And I believe there's 41 that are still in effect as of today. So it is hardly an incredibly rare thing, and it is a very well structured thing. He's simply wrong there, wrong or lying. You can take it either way. In arguing for why we sort of have done it, he goes on to say things like, we've conserved more land, we've rejoined the Paris Climate Accord. Yes, that's awesome. Very, very bold to rejoin the climate accord that we were already a part of. And yes, he's conserved land. He's done a variety of things that have been good for the environment. The question was for a specific thing. Have you declared an emergency? And he has not. He seemingly wants credit for doing it, but he hasn't done it. And the reason why I think we can and should be angry about this is not just that he's still sort of playing games with words, but he was very specific back in 2021 in the wake of what looked like at that point, Joe Manchin was gonna kill the IRA. He said, climate change is an emergency. And in the coming weeks, I'm gonna use the power I have as president to turn these words into formal official government actions through the appropriate proclamations, executive orders, and regulatory power that a president possesses. That is, and I don't think I'm being unfair, a promise to declare a climate emergency. And he did not do that. And 2 years later, while most of the country is on fire right now, he still has not done that. So anyway, we could debate his record on the climate and perhaps we'll do that right now. But this is an area where he deserves all the criticism I think he's gonna get. But Jessica, what do you think?
Hang on, John. I think you have a bug on you. This is the president of the United States dodging a question with, hang on, you have a bug on you. Thank God that reporter just kept asking the same question, what, three times it took to get a real response. And a lot of reporters will take that as, you know what, we love the political establishment. We do a lot of bidding for them. So this is him signaling he doesn't want to answer the question I just asked. And sometimes they'll move on. But how bad of a response is it for him to say, practically speaking, yes, I already did that, when realistically speaking, he did not do that. We don't have any of the benefits of the actions he could possibly take and we could take on as a country. If he did declare a climate emergency, it would open up so much funding, give him so much permission to do more stuff. It's like when Donald Trump said, well, I basically declassified the documents by taking them out of the White House. Now they're no longer classified because they're in my possession as a private citizen. No, you have to actually do the thing to get credit for doing the thing. He hasn't kept any of his campaign promises, a few, but the big ones that a lot of young people in particular turned out for, declaring a climate emergency, codifying abortion rights, canceling student loan debt, he hasn't delivered on. And he's getting in his own way for doing it. He didn't even give a real reason as to why he can't declare a climate emergency. He just says, we practically already did. You know, we're working so hard. We're getting a lot of stuff done. No, you're not doing what you said you would do. And this is why Joe Biden is not polling as well as he should be, precisely because he's not getting stuff done. It has nothing to do with Donald Trump's rising popularity. It has nothing to do with him even being older, sleepy Joe. It's precisely you haven't delivered on what you said you would.
Yeah. And look, in some of the, we can nuance some of the, like the, with the student debt, you know, you can say more so than in some areas he tried, but in the climate emergency, you didn't declare a climate emergency and then the Supreme Court overturned it or anything. You didn't even try to do it. Something that you don't need to get through the Senate. You don't need to have to do lunches with Kyrsten Sinema. You just have to do it. You could literally do it on your own anytime you want. And you're choosing not to do that. You could even if you're not a brave man, you could take the fact that we're in the middle of an apocalyptic heat wave. Take that as the cover you need to feel a little bit of courage. But he's still not doing it. And it is consequential that he's not doing it, by the way. If he were to do it, what would that mean? According to a Brennan Center report, there's about 123 statutory powers that could be made available to him without any further input from Congress, simply if he were to declare a climate emergency. And I'm not saying he would do all of these things, but there's a lot that he could do were he to do that. He could reinstate the ban on crude oil exports, which was exports. We want to keep the exports. The exports overturned in 2015, that would slash a great deal of greenhouse gas emissions. He could curb fossil fuel imports as well. He likely would not do that, but he could do that. He could halt new oil and gas drilling on more than 11 million acres of federal waters, even without the emergency. He could stop approving it, by the way, which he does not want you to remember. Declaring a national emergency would free up federal funds and other disaster relief resources that could be put into, you know, renewable energy, construction, weatherizing houses, a whole lot of different stuff that he could do, a lot of good that he could do. And that's just off the top of some people's heads. In, you know, working with Congress, there's even more that he could do with that emergency declaration. But he hasn't done that. He doesn't look like he's gonna do that. It's why 57% of Americans disapprove of his handling of the climate emergency. And how much it matters that they disapprove, we can have a debate about what it meant, you know, a year or two ago. But right now, people are thinking about how GD hot it is. So this is something that could actually hurt him. Quick final thought, Jessica.
I think if I was Joe Biden and I was getting this kind of pressure from reporters and having young people interrupt press conferences about how little my administration is doing, I would say, hey, guess what? If I actually want to win in 2024, it's not too late to do the right thing, Joe. It's not too late to declare a climate emergency now. Maui is literally on fire. Now is the time to do it. We have so much smoke coming in from Canada. I think people all across the country realize that this is a problem. Even in DeSantis's state, he's had premiums for insurance go up 206%. People know storms are getting worse. Farmers insurance left the state of Florida where I am right now. That's insane. Republicans are not delivering on this. This is something he could win on if he made it central. The messaging isn't hard. It's deliberate that they're not doing it, but it's not too late to change before 2024.
I agree, 100%. Okay, that is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the show, but there's a lot more to come in the aftermath, so don't go anywhere. Jessica and I will be right back. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.